Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody to another special edition of Jawanza for Life. I am so excited today. Thank you so much for tuning in. It is truly an honor and a blessing to have you along. You will not regret having tuned in this afternoon, wherever you are. I thank you again. Wow. If you heard that song, then you know the voice. If you're wondering, who is that? I like that. Well, you're about to find out. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest first before I bring her on. She has sung with some of the greatest names in pop, rock, and R&B. Try the Rolling Stones. Try Alice Cooper, the Marshall Tucker Band, Laura Nyro, the OJs, Wilson Pickett, Bo Diddley, and she's a founding member of Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells. That's right. If you don't know yet, just hold on. She's appeared on with hundreds of renowned recording artists from Keith Richards to Stevie Wonder. She is, of course, again, as I stated, a founding member of Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells that later morphed into LaBelle in the 1970s. And if you don't know who I'm talking about yet, just keep listening. I'm not done yet. Okay, she had a dance hit smash called Center Man and Low Down Dirty Rhythm. And in more recent times, in 2007, she appeared in San Francisco's Tetro Zizzani theatrical production that drew rave reviews. And I'm telling you, you are in for a treat today. Backed by popular demand, I am so very, very happy and blessed to introduce to you today, Sarah Dash. I got to say it like Don Cornelius. Sarah. Welcome back to Jawanza for Life. How you doing, Sister Sarah?
Good evening, Jawanza. I'm so happy to be here with you this evening today. It's just, I'm doing good.
It's truly an honor. It's been a while since we've spoken, and I know that the listeners are in for a treat this afternoon. And, you know, I promised everybody that they were in for a fabulous show, and boy, are they ever. So,
yes.
What have you been up to lately, my sister?
Well, I will start backwards. I took on a mini, excuse me, a mini hiatus. I had such a variety of shows to do this past month, starting with the Raz Room where I did my one-woman show. I did a Disco Inferno with Melba Moore, Yvonne Elliman, and Maxine Nightingale. Then I did a Broadway production, which was called The Night of a Thousand Judies, where everyone on that lineup sang Judy Garland songs. Then I was down in Dallas, Texas, with the Black National Arts and Letters Theater for a whole weekend doing the Sarah Dash one-woman show at their Muse Theater there. So I've been working constantly since the middle of May straight into July 5th, and just doing a variety of music. And the kind of music that I enjoy doing is everything. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been up to. And now I'm in rewrites for the one-woman production.
You know, as I listen to you talk, it's so amazing to me because you've been doing music for so long. It's obvious that, you know, music is such a large part of your life. I can't say that music is your life because, of course, you are more than music. There are other sides of Sarah Dash besides music, but music has encompassed so much of your life. I mean, just dating so far back, you know, and then, you know, just like the song that we played bringing you on, one of my favorite songs by you is I'm Still Here, you know, after all of these years of the music and the industry and, you know, everything that comes along with that, to still be here, you know. And just doing what you love doing and still doing music. I mean, that's awesome to me, you know.
Well, you know, music.
But if you could, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No,
I know there's a little slight delay here, so if I jump in on you or you jump on me or whatever, that's okay because it's a little delay going on. But, you know, for the listeners, a lot of the listeners here that are listening know that you've done other projects. You know, after the Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, then again, LaBelle. But if you could take us back to the beginning, because when I look at people's lives and I look at their careers and where they are today, I know that it had to start somewhere. It had an origin. And when I think back to, you know, I just imagine you as a little girl singing, you know, and at some point somebody noticing that you had talent. And then for you to believe that you had talent and to actually pursue that and then to ultimately, you know, get into the industry and, you know, all of the different wonderful places that it took you. Could you take us back to the beginning? Just when did you notice that you had talent, or when was it first said to you that, you know, Al, you need to be singing? You know, can you take us to the beginning?
Sure, I can. I became aware of my talent at the age of 7 years old. I was in third grade, and one of my teachers heard me humming one day, and I wasn't even aware I was humming. I always hum right up until this day. And the school was having a Thanksgiving program, and they had yet to find a student that could sing a lead song. And she heard me, and she said, I believe you can do this. And I was the youngest child. Actually, I should have been in the fourth grade in order to be in this production. And they put me on the stage. I remember my mother, this little white overcoat with the red, big red bow. And my mom said to me, don't scratch your head no matter what you do. And it seemed to me like that day I had an itch. But I did. The first production was a Thanksgiving program at my elementary school, And I remember to this day what that song was, and it was called With These Hands I Pray to Thee.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning. I then was joined and went to the church youth choir, and the first music teacher I had was Pearl Lewis, and I sang with the youth choir. Then I became a teenager and wanted to sing other music. And so with that, I formed a group with Shirley Newkirk and the famous Nona Hendrix. We were in mm-hmm. high school, and we were then the Del Capris. Well, the manager of the Del Capris also had another group called the Ordettes, and that group consisted of Cindy Birdsong and Patti LaBelle. Well, when there were few other girls in the group, and there were other people in our group as well, when they started to fall by the wayside, we had the same manager, so he put the two of us together, hence the Philadelphia arm and the New Jersey arm, and that's how we became Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells with the song called I Sold My Heart to the Junkman.
Wow.
Yes.
That had to be something. I mean, when you look back at that time, because I know that they say when you look back that it doesn't seem as long ago as it has been. I mean, when you're looking ahead.
Oh, it seems long.
Yeah, it does. Well, when you look back, because I know for myself, when I look ahead, it seems long. When I look back, it's like, wow, that seemed like, you know, 20 years seemed like 10, you know.
Well, you
so,
know,
I mean,
it really, it doesn't. You're right, Anza. You are absolutely right. Because the energy that comes within you, it really is a place where you wake up in the morning and you look at your schedule and you're on the next beat and you keep going. And then when you look back and you say, oh, the Apollo, the Howard, the Regal, the Uptown, then you went into nightclubs and you went into concerts and, you know, big halls around the country, the Metropolitan Opera House, it did go fast. And when you reach, I think when you reach the age sort of around 25, 30, you begin, I think it just goes full speed ahead, just full mm-hmm. speed ahead. Yes. And you look at your accomplishments and you said, now, because from time to time I'll get a call from Nona and Patti or their office, and they'll say, Sarah, can you tell me what date it was when we did XYZ? And I go, wow, that was like 20 years ago. We've been apart for 30.
Wow, yeah. Isn't that something? I mean, yeah. Just to even of the dreams that you all shared, I mean, can you take us back to, you know, back to the rehearsals and the first big break that you got, because again, you mentioned the formation of the group. They took two groups, and you know, one disbanded, and they took members from these two groups and put them together. And you know, the rehearsals, and when did the big break come? You know, when did it, you know, just break for you? And it's like, okay, wow, we did it. We're out here. We've got a record deal. We're traveling. We're, you know, we're doing concerts now.
Well, you know, we were blessed as Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, we went immediately to the American Bandstand with Dick Clark. That was major for any artist at that time. The American Bandstand went all across the country. And then came the Apollo Theater, which was totally major for an R&B act. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, we became known as the group that would stop the shows, because we sang not only our hits, but we began to do standards such as Danny Boy, You Never Walk Alone. I'm sure some of the people here may not know what those songs are, but they were classics that no other groups were doing. And as I said, as a result of that, we became the sweethearts of the Apollo, because now you remember we were coming into an era where they stopped presenting so many jazz artists, and now it's about the R&B singers. And to have us stand up there and sing classics like the Mill Brothers would sing or someone like that, it was just an amazing time for us. And the audiences at the Apollo actually dictated to what the other theaters we were playing, how they would treat us. We were a regional hit person, and then Mary Decay, we became his favorite, and he had us at the Brooklyn Fox, and there we were doing shows with Tom Jones and the Shirelles, Chuck Jackson, Benny King, and we had these classic songs that that Murray loved to hear us sing. We worked with the Ronettes, we worked with the Shirelles, and all had their hits were more major than ours, but we could hold a match to the stage. And plenty of times, Patti LaBelle and the Blue Bells would stop the show, and it would be hard for the other acts to come on. I can say that now. We did a show with Smokey Robinson, and he admitted publicly that he didn't want to see us for a very long time.
That was a compliment. I mean, coming from Smokey, because Smokey was like the man back in the day, and for him to say that he didn't want to see you all coming because he knew that you all were going to tear the roof off before the term even became popular, that's something.
Well, you know, at the Apollo, we actually had a lot of support from the owners, you know, the Schiffmans, and there was a manager there by the name of Honey Cole, who they took a liking to us, and they really treated us well. So at the Apollo, that filtered into the audience as well, and we could do no wrong at the Apollo. Jumping forward a little bit, when we did our LaBelle did a reunion, our first date was at the Apollo.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Come full circle.
And if you go up there, there's a mural on the wall where we're right there with all of the R&B greats. There's a picture of Patti LaBelle and the Blue Bells, which includes Cindy Birdsong. Cindy Birdsong left our group and joined the Supremes. We were devastated by that action. But we just didn't know what to do, you know, in a case like that. But that's how we became three members in the group. A couple years after Cindy left, we were invited to go to London. We were the first African-American group to perform on UK television and a show called Ready, Steady, Go. And there we met the producer, Vicky Wickham, who later became LaBelle's manager.
Mm-hmm.
So we traveled as, you know, the Blue Bells, and then when we decided that we needed a change, that the industry was changing, the theaters were not booking as much as they used to. You know, there was a run and of different cities. You would do the Apollo, go down to Philadelphia, do the Uptown. Then you would go to Baltimore, do the Royal. Then you would go to Washington, D.C., do the Howard. Skip up to Chicago to do the Rego. And that was a run of work that we had. We've worked with people, classic acts such as Sam Cooke, Otis Redding as a group. We were very blessed at that time. And music was changing, and we needed to change. Meeting Vicky Wickham and staying in touch with her was a benefit for us, because she and the Who's manager took us to London. And there we changed our name from Patti LaBelle and the Blue Bells to LaBelle. Came back to America as LaBelle.
Well, you know what? What's very interesting to me is in listening to the history of, you know, you listening to your story and the history of Patti LaBelle and the Blue Bells and LaBelle, how that change, when it came about, it was like, wow. I mean, because during the early 70s, I mean, you still had groups like the Supremes out there. You had other groups that had changed somewhat. I mean, they had kind of moved away from the style of the Shirelles and the Marvelettes to now you had groups like The 3 Degrees, Love Unlimited, you know, both 3-girl groups. But you all seem to just skip that. I mean, y'all just, you just skipped the whole, that whole 3 Degrees, Love Unlimited thing and went straight from where we were sitting as listeners, as fans, from Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells to now. I mean, I turned on Soul Train one day and remember for the first time, and I was like, wow, who are these? Who are they? You know, I think, like, even if everybody that's listening, if you go back and watch the Soul Train of Patti LaBelle, of LaBelle on Soul Train, normally if you listen to the Soul Train dancers after a group has performed, you might, you know, you hear the regular complimentary claps or whatever, but after you all performed, they were like, wow, yeah, you just heard a whole lot of shouting and clap. I mean, you could tell that there was something very electric, if not eclectic, going on there with you all. It was very, very powerful.
Well, when we changed from Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, we approached music a little totally different from the way we did as Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells. What we did was we, as 3 members in the group, we had Patti as the lead singer, but we, Nona and I also started singing more powerful and not so cutesy oohs in the background, but we actually opened our mouths and we began to sing as if we were lead singers singing harmony. And that was a difference. It was more powerful than what people were used to hearing a lead singer and background singers in a female group do. And that in itself, the training and the work that we did in London, approaching music differently. We were now singing songs by The Who. We Won't Get Fooled Again. We sang some Rolling Stones stuff, Wild Horses. And with the soulful touches, and then we began to write, and Nona became the more prevalent writer for the group, and we were singing now about social changes in America, because during that time, you know, the world, the country was looking for something different. We had just come out of the civil rights movement. There was the Vietnam War, and people were looking for a change. They needed something to hold on to, something that they could relate to. There was now, you know, just a cultural change within the society that people needed to hear about. Singing We Won't Get Fooled Again meant that we would not be fooled again. Also, we did a song called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. We were rapping, which we sang a song that started with, "Ooh, there's something in the air," and branched out into the rap within that song. Gil Scott Heron's The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, you know. There will be no pictures. There will be no, you know, there will be no man in the gray jumpsuit and those sort of things. And that was reality that society could hold on to. They had never seen anything, especially coming from females who are now standing up, not just for women's rights, but for rights of all people, all colors, mm-hmm. all nationalities, gay people, straight people, you know, religious people even related to us. So that we were a part of a culture, we were innovators of a change in the industry, also in the way that we performed. The girl groups were used to the same gowns, same wigs, same shoes. Here we are individually coming out in our individual personalities and characters, but yet singing as one unit. We changed the way that females looked in the industry, how they performed, and there were singers and other performers as well. After we did the Metropolitan Opera House with the productions, we actually were the first people to use flying instruments to bring us into stage. We had these elaborate costumes. We started with the space age look, and we were space children. We were bringing in a time that people had never seen within any female or male group. And to be a black female group standing strong all our whole business unit was all women. We had a female manager. We had a female lawyer. We were co-producing our music, and we also were writing, and now we had our own production company, and we had our publishing company. We not only became more mature in how we sang, but we also became businesswomen at that time, which was an unheard of thing for the industry. It wasn't easy taking those steps because there were some executives in the music industry who were like, what? They're wearing pants and they're wearing this? But even as Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, we came out with bell bottoms, and that offended some DJs and some people. What do they got bell bottoms on? We had always been sitting on the edge of controversial change, you know?
Well, you know,
so there.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, no, go ahead, please.
And so there.
You were saying Yes.
We always presented ourselves. We wanted to always be different than anyone else in the music industry.
Well, you were definitely different. Again, when I recall looking back, and even just going back and looking back at some of the old videos of LaBelle, but there was still always this class that you all had about you, even in the attire that some would have at the time been viewed as controversial. I mean, here, people go back and look at you in the LaBelle back in the day. I mean, you might have came out there in something like you were like the black I Dream of Jeannie, you know. But still, with all the class, I look at you. If people go back and look at your movements, even your arms and move, you were moving like you had on a flowing gown, you know what I'm saying? But
yes, because you know, I'm not putting anyone down, but you know, if you're the look that I created for myself, no one had ever seen a singer other than Josephine Baker, and she wasn't as you know dressed that way, but to have a silver bra made and formed to shape to your body and to have that kind of look, it was revolutionary, but it was needed because I could stand there dressed that way and still be considered a classy woman, to be a woman. You know, I always, my saying is, Jawanza, and here I go on my spiritual trip, is that woman is God-made and lady is man-made. So I gave the society, I consider that last statement as, you know, this is something that society has never seen, and the media created it as something new and sparkling and wonderful. And I just felt that, you know, it was time to say, no matter what we were wearing, what we were saying, we gave the costumes in the beginning because we wanted people to take note. So we used the law of attraction to enhance that ability to get our music and message across. There was Patti in high heel boots. No woman ever in a group ever decided that they were going to wear thigh-high boots, platform heels. There was Nona with whips and chains and writing these phenomenal songs. And we were just something different and new that society really embraced because they, too, had a need for something new and different. So, you know, it did work.
It worked.
Really did. Playing the Metropolitan Opera House, being the first black female group ever, I don't think there has been a group to follow, started playing opera houses, you know, because sometimes, you know, you have to take the time to really think about what your reasons are, what it truly is that you're trying to do. And we were trying to get our message across. And, you know, when we would discuss our expectations and our desires about this good thing that we were feeling, you know, we were blessed to be able to have each other to talk about those things. And one of the things I find myself doing these days is reflecting on the songs that I wrote in the past, because LaBelle didn't record them. I sort of put them away, And now they're a part of my performances. And when people come up to me after my one-woman show and say, wow, who wrote that song? You know, He'll Take Care of You. And I said, that's a song that I wrote. I was, you know, not feeling well, and my mom came to me in a dream and gave me that song. And, you know, they asked me about the song, you know, If I See Another Day, Will I Say What I Have to Say? And that song being I Feel Good Being Me, Now What About You? You know, finding peace with yourself. How are you going to get it from somebody else if you can't find peace with yourself? So, mm-hmm. you know, this side of us never leaves. And then when we came up with a hit like Lady Marmalade, I take it to a spiritual place. It's like the woman at the well, those who are without sin cast the first stone, you know? So it's really been a part of who I am today. And I'm sure Nan and Patty would tell you the same thing. Had we not had each other to develop into who we, into women as to where we are today, I don't think any of us would be who we are. We are the first group that is still a part of the music industry, a part of the arm. We're all doing different things, but we had three career changes. Patti LaBelle and the Blue Bells, LaBelle, now there's Patti LaBelle, now there's Nona Hendrix, and there was Sarah Dash. And what we did was, another thing in an identifying process was, you would always see these groups, but you never knew who, what their names were. So it was part of our struggle was to say, we are a group, and this is Patti LaBelle, this is Nona Hendrix, and Sarah Dash. So we would say, Patti LaBelle, Nona Hendrix, Sarah Dash, R. LaBelle. So it gave the fans a chance to also identify with us on an individual level and collectively. And today we are, you know, still rolling. And that's nothing but a blessing from God. It is purely a spiritual blessing that I don't take for granted, because I know without the powers of Most High, I wouldn't be here. And that's where I'm Still Here came from.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking on a cane. I was having health issues. Couldn't walk for 4 years. And when I would show up at events, sometimes I had to have that cane. And one day I walked into the studio, and I was now going to do this inspirational CD. And I sat down with the producer, and he said, wow, you've had this and you've been through that. He was sort of questionable about whether we'd be able to do this CD. And I said to him, I said, but I'm still here. Mm. And that's how I'm Still Here came about. You know, been through so much in my life. Every day a different fight. Been down the road of broken dreams, and they told me I was weak. But somehow I got back on my feet by overcoming my fears. I survived through the worst of times. Take a look at me now, because I'm still here. And it is our fears that cause us to run from our dreams and from our purpose, God's purpose. And you know, one of the things that I can say is that, you know, I'm in the year 2014, and it is a blessing. I've been through other health issues, and I've been really blessed to come through certain times of illness and setbacks. And as I heard a pastor say, a setback is only getting you ready for a comeback, you know, and to still have some depth and honesty and caring about people, you know, which leads me to the different organizations that I work with. I work with homeless women, raising funds for them. I'm a top lady of distinction, and our thing is education, and we have fundraisers every year. And last year I chaired the fundraiser for the top ladies of distinction in the New Jersey area, and I had Melba Moore come down as my keynote speaker, because she herself as a school teacher, and I felt, why not have an entertainer come who has been educated in the system and has taught school and talked to these people about how important it is for us to continue to support education and to support the arts. And I'm a strong supporter of the arts. I'm a trustee for the newly formed Capitol Philharmonic Orchestra. We have 70 musicians, and our maestro is Dan Spalding. I'm also elected again to the Board of Governors for the Grammys, and I have students that I teach, and I'm a woman who prays every day, who meditates during the day, who has an email ministry of sending out prayers, not only to my family and friends, but to other performers as well. And there's a network of performers who have now come to the realization that we do need God in our lives. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a performer and that has just moved to Albany, and they said, I thank God that man does not produce rain because my garden would never grow.
Well, wow. Well, Sister Sarah, can I surprise you? I got a surprise for you.
Do you? May I? Who? What? Is it a gift?
Yes, I do. If you don't mind, okay.
I don't mind.
Now, if you're not sitting down, you might want to sit down. Okay, here we go. You are on the air with Sarah Dash, my brother.
Well, you girls made me winded trying to chase you around America.
Who is this?
This is Louis Gossett Jr.
Oh,
well, you guys were faster than me. I couldn't catch up with y'all.
Oh, my goodness.
How you
so
doing, honey?
Nice to hear you.
Same here, boy. I was with you in every word. I've had the same experiences. You know, God has restored me to sanity to do this wonderful service. He has ways to tap us on the shoulder and remind us what's most important, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And it's so wonderful because we have grown together in the business, even though you're an actor. I've been doing some acting now, so you can call on me. But
yeah, we're contemporaries. We did this together.
Yeah, Lou, I cannot. Those of you who are listening, this man is such a great actor, and he's such a sensitive, embracing, wonderful person. The work that you've done, Lou, is just phenomenal, and you have the ability to go into any kind of character that you want, and that's what I loved about your work.
Well, you girls were universal. You transcended.
What is the word they call it in music
when everybody likes you?
Oh, I don't
know.
The
word. You know. Anyway,
famous.
Huh?
Famous.
It's like you went with the white and the black and the Latina, everybody. You were something around. I forgot what they called it.
We were crossovers.
That's right. That's the word.
Yes.
That's the word. You were crossovers. And
yes.
That's what they did for you.
We were Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells as a keyboard player.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Nona used to scare me with them outfits, though.
Huh?
Nona used to scare me with them outfits.
Oh, no.
I used to come around and talk to you first and then Patty and scream at Nona. Hi, Nona.
Nona wore the whips and the chains.
She was down, boy.
Between you and some of those groups, you guys were crossing.
That's exactly what you were. I saw you everywhere in the world I saw you.
That's true. We saw you in London. We saw you everywhere.
That's right. At Carnegie Hall. Saw you at the Opera House. Saw you at everywhere.
The Metropolitan Opera House.
In Australia.
In Australia. Oh, my God. You know, Lou, at the Opera House, you know, it was my father's first time seeing the group. He was flipping out because I am a pastor's kid. I'm a PK.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that, everybody.
You got to watch out for the preacher's daughters,
I'm in the pastor's daughter.
You know, watch out for preacher's daughters, you know.
Yes, that's what they did, Jawanza. And they would say, look at her. And she's a preacher's daughter with no clothes on. Yes.
I got Dream of Jeannie, Lou.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes, but you all were so always respectful of us. You always protected us and looked out for us.
Absolutely.
And Juwanza, it was like, okay, so we're hanging out. But somebody had to go back to the hotel. They were like, okay, bye, see you later.
That's right. That's
Party's
right.
Party's over.
Take care of one
Come
another.
Get some rest.
Yes, we did have to take care of one another.
Yes, we did. Yes,
we
did.
We're sometimes out there in deep water, you know.
Yes. And Lou, what are you doing now? What's going on?
Well, turn on your television tomorrow night at 10 o'clock, and I play Halle Berry's father in Next Stand.
Ah,
I've done 6 hours for 6 hours for BET called The Book of Negroes.
Oh,
and I will soon be
wonderful.
In Washington, D.C. Thursday night to speak to the President's Council because of my foundation. You look it up. It's called the E-Racism Foundation.
This is wonderful.
So I'm speaking at the President's Council and all the African countries, and then I'll reunite with Jomo's son, Uhuru Kenyatta, on the 8th.
Oh yes, yes.
So that's what we do at this age. We give it back.
That's what we do. That's what we do. Those of us who have a heart and have a spirit of truth in us, we know we didn't get there on our own. Somebody.
That's the way we used to do it. We have to do it again.
Do it again.
And
yes.
That's where the health returns.
It does, and it makes you stronger because you don't really think about it. It's just automatic.
Well, you remember what Grandma used to say? A hard head makes a strong behind.
Right. And I heard somebody say today, if you strut, you will stumble, so you better do it.
I want to thank you once for reuniting us. And
absolutely.
And he'll give you my number so we can continue on. How about that?
Okay, thank you, and I'll make sure he gives you mine.
Okay. I love you.
Perfect.
And I'm glad you're still hanging in there.
Thank you. Thank you. Now I'm really going to fight.
Okay, go for it. Go for
okay.
it. We'll talk, okay?
Thank you, Lou, for calling in.
God bless you, baby.
God bless you, too.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, my, Juwanza.
I told you, I had to get you.
Be there. I mean, Lou is like the person I used to talk to. And he would just say, you know, I like what you're doing, Sarah. Just hang in there. I mean, those outfits. And they'd be looking at me at the corner of the eye, and he'd be stepping right in the way. No, it's not what it looks like. This is a lady here. So it was just, oh, God, what a wonderful surprise.
I had to surprise you. I told you it was going to be a fabulous show.
Wow, and he's doing the Halle Berry television series. That is so phenomenal. That is great.
I look at both you and, Louis Gossett Jr., and I think of the longevity that you all have had and to have both come up through, you know, you were out when there was racism. I mean, you know, did you ever experience that? Did you ever experience any racism in, you know, your work coming up through the years before people became more tolerant, before, you know, people's mindsets started changing? Ever any incidences where people told you couldn't play any place?
Well, I remember going down south at Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells for the first time. And walking into a drugstore because I had some kind of car sickness or something, and I needed to take a pill. And I went into a drugstore, and, of course, my manager and chaperone were looking for me frantically. And I said, I'd like to have a cup of water, please. The guy said, I have no water. I said, but there's the water fountain over there. And just as I was about to say, can't you see, my chaperone came in and snatched me out of the store. You know, before it became an incident. We were once touring with the Isley Brothers, Joe Tex, Chuck Jackson, and we had a few dates, and everybody decided that they were going to drive, and we had a motor home that we rode in, and so we sort of all stuck together when we had to do night driving. And one night, Chuck Jackson got a flat tire, and we pulled into a gas station, and the owner said something really vulgar to them. It was like, you know, we want you to dance, you entertainers or something, and it turned into a confrontation. For some reason, our manager said, let's get out of here right now. Chuck had to jump in the car and ride on a flat tire. And as we went down the road maybe about a mile, there was a truck of white men with rifles, and on this flat back truck, they were coming for us. But we had already passed them.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sure that when you look back at all of the things that you had to go through, and just to see the changes in society, even, you know, I mean, you all were there back in right during the racist times. You were there during the, you know, the flower children period, the, you know, black power movement. I mean, and just seeing music as the mindsets of people change. By the way, I want to say to the listeners online, the phone lines are full. By the way, anybody that has a question or a comment, if you want to come on and say hi to Sarah, all you have to do is press 1 on your telephone, and I will bring you on board, and you can speak to Sarah Dash. For those who are listening online, same thing. Press 1, and I can bring you on board, and you can talk to Sarah Dash. Just to still, I mean, to look back at where you are now and just see how the world has changed. I mean, and for you to have just even been exposed to different parts of the world, you all have played all over the world. Like you said, you saw Lou in Australia, you know? I mean, you've seen him in London. I mean, you all have been all over the world. How did that exposure to different cultures, you know, growing up here in the United States and then seeing how other people lived and, you know, what did that do to you in terms of just your scope, in terms of your thought process? How did it, you know, affect you or help to shape, mold you, being able to see other cultures like that?
It really, you become an appreciative, appreciative of people. It's an education that you don't get in school, you don't get in any books. When you're standing next to someone and they speak, well, Spanish is not as rare as it used to be, but or Italian or French, and all you vibe on is the inner spirit of yourself. You begin to look and know that you seem to know what is going on. It enhances you as a person because you do become, as I say, more appreciative of human life. Germany, I remember being in Germany, and I had just come from Brussels, and I also had some francs from France and the Brussels francs, and here I am with the German dollar. And I didn't know what to do. And I mean, I had a lot of money, and cash money, that is, to put your hand out and say, take what has to be paid. You know, that's a trust. And if you are meeting people of decency, and they say, no, that's a French franc, that's a, you know, Brussels franc. And just to be able to perform in front of them and to trust that ability to entertain them, you see, music is, it bridges the gap.
Mm-hmm.
You can set
yes.
your music down in front of Chinese, Japanese, Italians. Music is a universal language. And so there, you have an. I feel more blessed to be able to relate to people musically in different and foreign countries. And what it did for me was say, I could go anywhere, do this music. There's no bridge, there's no gap, there's no racism in music when you set down those charts. It doesn't. Music charts don't say I'm a black singer. You may be doing an R&B song, but those notes don't change. A B-flat minor seventh is still a B. In America, it's still a B-flat minor seventh in Italy.
Right. That's right.
Yes.
Wow. Well,
yes.
Sister, we've got about 10 minutes left. I want to talk about the one-woman show, but I want you to, if you could, because there could be somebody out there right now that's listening, and you, I mean, just sharing what you did about everything that you had to overcome to still be here. There could be somebody out there that needs to hear a word of encouragement, that needs to hear a positive word, just because sometimes life gets hard. You know, you mentioned that you were on a cane. You know, sometimes life can get real hard sometimes, and sometimes people need to hear somebody else say that, hey, I've been there. You know, I've been where you are. You know, talk about God and the relationship and the role that God and faith played in your life in regards to why you're still here.
Well, you know, when my dad was living, he gave me a list of scriptures. One day he called me and he said, I want you to read these scriptures. And one of them was Psalm 37, fret not thyself because of evildoers, nor be afraid. One of the other ones was Isaiah 54:7, no weapon formed against thee shall prosper. Some of the things that happen to us, some of the bad things that happen to us, will happen to good people. Bad things do happen to good people. But there's no need to be afraid, because when you go to God in sincere prayer, there is nothing that you can't, that you will not be able to achieve. You know, sometimes you look through the process of how am I going to make it. I always say, ask for sustained provision. You know, take the time and talk through your dreams with other spiritual people, people who have wisdom and knowledge. If you've fallen down and you've broken your leg and now your boss wants to fire you, pray that you will meet the right person in your life to help you get past that challenge. Because when wrong is wrong, it is wrong. You cannot bury truth. I don't care how you look at it. If you are not the cause of something in your life, you're not the blame. It's only a challenge and an obstacle that you're facing. And challenges and obstacles are what? Nothing but lessons. Lessons to learn. When you look back and you see how you've overcome some of those challenges and obstacles, you know, you can only say, thank God. I thank God I'm still here. You know, you when you're praying in the morning, don't just pray for yourself, but pray for the people who you know who have mistreated you and spitefully done wrong to you. Because that doesn't, the people who do wrong things to you, it has nothing to do with you. If somebody is treating you nasty or mistreating you, it says a lot about them. But it's not how they treat you. It's how you treat them in the process. That's called humbling yourself before the Lord. Humbling yourself before wrongdoers, naysayers. The naysayers will come in groups. Naysayers seem to have what they call that mob scene, and you can feel it in your gut, and sometimes you ignore it. When you're dealing with a bunch of with someone who is saying, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that, ask the question and say, why would I listen to this person? What kind of track record do they have to prove that I can't do it? You can't find it. You can't find it. Because when you start to do better, there's going to be a lot of people who's going to be left by the wayside because they haven't grown. It's not that they're bad people, but sometimes you have to leave people where they are until they catch up to where you are. Don't ever step back and try to be someone that you're not. If the Lord tells you to move three mountains, try to move those mountains, because at the end of the day, behind those mountains is nothing but a beautiful rainbow. You know, talk to God about the things that you want to do. You know, look at what your dreams are. Take them to God, because sometimes you can't take your dreams or your wishes or your plans, for that matter, to people, because there's someone always out there who may be in a position to help you but won't. But in the meantime, because they're not totally aware or have grown to a place where they could actually be kind and generous, and they're insecure and they're fearful of what you might take from them, won't help you. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, when you pray, there's nothing in the world that you can't achieve. Some people laugh I've had people laugh at me and tell me, oh, she's into God now. Well, if you can say that about me and you're not, I'm not getting on a plane with you. I know you. By yourself. Mm-mm. Don't come over here. because sometimes, because sometimes, you know, the work of some people don't like to say this word, you know, you don't want to give the devil any more power than they have, and you don't want to put anybody down because of the lack of growth that they have. But faith is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Faith unlocks the door. Faith gives you vision. Faith lets you see the demons that are coming at you now. Whether you listen to that first mind, it's like you hear older people say, Lord, if I just follow my first mind. That's the most purest voice you will hear ever, because there's nothing like the other voices you will hear. That there's something about your first mind, that small, sweet, still voice. And each time that you go against it, you're going to pay a price.
Mm.
Now, sometimes you have to explore the situation to get the lesson, to get the wisdom. But you don't always have to fall down to have wisdom. You can have role models who are still human, but they can guide you to a place that you can recognize the peace that you are supposed to have. And everything you do is for God's purpose. It's God's purpose for you in your life. Sometimes doors will shut in your face. But think about why that door was shut. Because the Lord knew that what was behind that door wasn't going to bless you. Start looking at it that way. You go for a project, it all falls down. Something within that project wasn't a blessing for you. You see, and people really, you know, opportunities are never wasted because there was somebody who needed that opportunity more than you. So you still bless someone, even if they may have gotten it through ill means. You still have been a blessing to someone. And I always say, walk as if you were the only person walking on earth, but still be aware that there are other people around you. Because when you are a child of the kingdom, you can have spiritual arrogance that nobody else has, and it's not a negative. It's like, I know no matter what you do to me or what you say about me, you can't touch me because my Father in heaven is a king, and I am the king's child. I'm heir to his throne. I get a piece of his good action, and you can be troublesome. Just pray for those troublesome people. But when you are troubled and you don't know where to go, say, I trust God. I trust him for sustained provision. I trust him for peace. I trust him for my love. I trust him for my business. I trust that he will open doors that no man can close. Sometimes, you know, you get turned around and because you're about to make a wreck of your life, and God would, and things will just turn to the other side of the fence, and you go, I worked so hard to get that, and I did that. Well, look at the lessons you learned while you were working. And then when you got to the point of where you felt that you should be receiving, there had to be something that you were overlooking. Oh, you know, the Lord being our shepherd, and the reason why, because we are his sheep, and the reason why sheep need a shepherd is because sheep won't fight. So when the song says, I hold my peace, let the Lord fight my battles, because victory, victory shall be mine.
Wow. Sister Sarah, I could sit here and listen to you for another 2 hours.
Well, you know, having faith has really helped me with my dreams. It has also, having faith has opened doors for me that I had no idea that they would be open. And then having faith also closed the unwanted doors. And I just want to say to other artists who are coming up in the industry, don't be afraid to serve God, whoever you may perceive him to be. But have a place you can go that you can spiritually sit down and go. Don't wait until they have you're on bail for $1 million because of something that you stupidly did, or you might have slapped a police officer, or all that is not going to set you up for your future. You may not think you have a future, but in God, you always have a future. You always, your past prepares you and propels you towards your future. But don't wait until you're in trouble with the law. In fact, don't even try to be a lawbreaker. Have some dignity about the way you handle yourself. You know, there are some young people out here dying in their 20s and in their teens. They have lost their way. Some have fallen victim to those who, you know, are no longer here. They have fallen victim to the ones who had the arms to destroy them. But you don't have to live that way. And artists, I tell you, it may seem like it's a hip thing to do today because everybody's getting arrested and everybody's cursing somebody out and everybody's calling women whores and hoes or whatever. But you are now having your own children. And do you want somebody to walk up to the door and say, I came to pick up that whole daughter of yours? Do you want that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want that to happen? Do you really want your child to be addressed as a B? Do you really think that you have a place in society if you keep going to jail? Because singing might change. I've changed a lot of things in my career. You know, not a lot. But music has afforded me to go places where I would never go. But as a result of that, I do the work for the community. I teach vocals. I sit on boards. Don't think that Neil, the CEO of the Grammys, would break the door down to have me sit on the board in my chapter if I was steady out there brandishing guns and dropping it like it's hot, and still the Grammys have to go and have a day on the Hill. Do you think he would want that? We have to face these senators and congressmen, and not that they're pure in heart, but there's something called presentation that lasts for a long time, and the way you impress people when they meet you, because they, too, have to impress you for you to be in their company. It's not just the one-way street. But
yes.
I just feel that we need to, as artists, pay attention to your youth and how you're doing things. Prepare your way for your future. You don't need 20 cars because that's 20 payments. And when you add that up and now the records are not selling and the performances are not, you're not in demand, you need something to fall back on. So I'm ever so thankful for having the parents that I have had in my life, because my dad set me up when I was 19 years old. So I don't have to run through and do the rushes and the things. When I'm on a budget, when that budget is finished, I'm broke until I get the next one. I am not going to wake up in the morning and say, I have to go to work because the bank will take my house. That's crazy. Don't live that way. Put your money away. And whatever society says you're supposed to act like, if society is not giving it to you, don't worry about it.
Sister Sarah, you are awesome. You're just awesome. I mean, just the words that you've spoken this evening, I'm sure has blessed a lot of people. I'm sure that, you know, oftentimes we are vessels for God, even when we're not even conscious of the fact that, okay, we're going to be vessels for God today, you know. And oftentimes the words that we speak might touch somebody's lives who we'll never meet, and we'll never know how our words touch that person's life. And my belief is that today, that you were a vessel for God and that you touched somebody's life today with the words that you spoke. I want to talk about briefly the one-woman show that you're doing so that the listeners, your fans out there can be on the lookout for that. Sister Sarah is still busy, Okay, you might not hear her every day on the radio like you used to, but she's still busy. Could you talk about your one-woman show?
My one-woman show consists of the times and years that I've spent in the music industry. It's a chronological piece, and it ends current up to today. It speaks about, well, I opened the performance with I'm Still Here, of course. And I do music from the Rolling Stones that I've experienced performing, the songs that I did with Keith Richards and the Expensive Winos. And it also talks about the life lessons that I learned through meeting other artists. One Woman Show talks about my life, and it has solutions. It's just not problematic where, oh, she fell down the steps and nobody picked her up, and you know, or, you know, somebody slapped her. And there is also solutions to every problem that is spoken about in that piece. I do a segment where I do a LaBelle medley. I do my disco hits. I do new songs that I've written that are relative to the stories that I'm telling. It just speaks from every angle, and I don't leave out my spiritual life. As I said before, I am a pastor's daughter, the late Elder Abraham Dash. His teachings and the way him and my mom raised me, I was blessed to be in a two-parent home, and I never took it for granted. But as I got older, I saw the importance of having that blessing in my life. So the One Woman Show speaks about that and how, you know, the challenges I had as a preacher's daughter with the church and the church members, and how they all embrace me now. I was in the hospital a while back, and the first person I saw was one of the pastors, Elder Morrow, standing there at the door just as if my father was. And this is a pastor that was trained under my father. And he and his wife Laverne, they're very close to me. There's a pastor, Daryl Armstrong from Shiloh Baptist Church. There is my cousin, Bishop Wilcox. So I'm still blessed to have these spiritual people in my life. And the One Woman Show speaks about the music. It speaks about the challenges. It speaks about the changes that I experience in the business, the musical changes, talks about the traveling experiences, missing planes. All that is a part of Sarah Dash, One Woman. And I say it selfishly, but it took me to come out of my problems with God's help. I had to face those issues first before they could be changed. I had to accept change in order to be able to walk on that stage and do One Woman. I hadn't been on the stage in that capacity for a while, and my friend Dr. David Rosenberg and a friend of mine, Robert Risco, they encouraged me to do the music and to do the story and to tell it. And I have great people, Kevin, and there's Philip. We have something called Team Dash. And there, you know, I have these supporters no matter what I feel like. They're always there to encourage me. And that's how One Woman keeps going, and that's how we keep developing the process to get it to a place where I will be able to take that piece anywhere in the world and people will know it. So that's
Sister Sarah, you again. My prayer is that God continues to bless you with health, that God continues to bless you with favor, and that just God continues to use you as a vessel through which he can get his message out to the world, the message of love, the message of faith, the message of peace, you know, the message of patience, you know, the message of endurance, you know, because you've seen it all. And you're still here, you know. And
yes.
For the listeners, again, yes, ma'am.
I have a wonderful family of sisters who are there You know, we are sisters, I tell you. We are sisters forever. I have 8 sisters, and we are something else. You know, we've all been touched by the hand of the Lord. And I thank you, Jawanza, for having me here this evening. You weren't aware of it, but I actually had tears coming down my eyes speaking about the Lord tonight. And I tell you, it's nothing but tears of joy. You count it all joy. You count it all joy.
God is good. God is good. God is good. And I could tell, I could feel your sincerity, your earnestness. And if you had tears, maybe some listeners out there that were listening, again, the phone lines are full. I mean, again, I'm going to give the listeners one last chance. If you want to say hi to Sarah before the show ends, press 1, and I can bring you on board, and you can say hi to Sister Sarah Dash, even if it's just to thank her for these encouraging words, because, Sister, you definitely spoke truth this evening. And it's important to surround yourself with a group of people that are supportive because, again, life can appear to be very hard sometimes. Matter of fact, we do have someone that wants to say hi to you. So let me bring her on right now or them on. Hello, you're on the air with Sarah Dash. Welcome to Jawanza for Life.
Hello.
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 Hi. Yes.
Hello.
This is for Ms. Dash. I have a comment. I attended the debut performance at the Beachman of the One Woman Show, and I would like to tell the listening audience it's a must-see.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate that support coming from you. And
where are you
what
calling
is your
from,
name?
Caller?
This is Paula from Baltimore.
You traveled to New York to see my debut of my one-woman show?
Yes, October 2011, correct?
That's true. Wow, God bless you.
Well, I am a very, very huge LaBelle fan.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate it. I'm sure Nona and Pat will get this message to know that a young lady from Baltimore is a huge LaBelle fan, and I suspect you support all of us then. Is that right?
Of course.
Yeah, I could tell it in your voice. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I will continue to work on this one-woman show so that everyone can get to see it. I had it down in Trenton, New Jersey, my hometown. And it was a sellout before we could even advertise. I had to add extra shows. So I'm due to come back in New Jersey area probably in the next season.
That's great.
Yes.
But like I want to put it out there to the listening audience. It's a must-see. So check out your website, correct?
Yes, my website is.
Your shows?
Yes, it's sarahdash.net. Please go to my website. Yes.
Will you be coming to D.C. anytime soon, Sarah?
We're working on a touring schedule. I don't know when that will be, the D.C. area. I'll be in the D.C. area. But, again, the listeners can go to my website, www.sarah-net, and there you will see the announcements of shows. I will be in Philadelphia, but I'm doing, Jawanza, a jazz show in August in Philadelphia for my pet charity, which is the Everlua House in Philadelphia. So I'll be doing a benefit show for them, but we're going to call it A Night of Jazz with Sarah Dash. And we're going to have some special guest artists and maybe some people that you know that will join me as well. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see if you can get, when you come to D.C., we'll see if you can't swing down to Richmond, Virginia, too, while you're area.
That's the one-woman show there. I sing jazz. I sing blues, which has turned the heads of a lot of promoters. I'm getting calls for jazz festivals and things like that because no one knew I could do that kind of music. So it's the one-woman show is just opening up a whole cachet of opportunity for me.
Wow. Well, Sister Sarah, well, thank you so much, Carla, for tuning in. Was there anything else you wanted to say to Sister Sarah?
Not so much to Ms. Dash, but to you for bringing her on. And I thank you to the highest. That says
thank
a lot
you.
About your spirit and soul.
Thank you so much, sister. I appreciate that as well.
You're welcome. More than welcome. All right.
Jawanda,
you
are wonderful because more artists should do your show because you have questions and you put us right there on the floor to explain and to really tell people who we are, which is a rarity today because there's always a stack of questions that people only want us to answer, and I appreciate the door opener for that.
Well, sister, I appreciate you, and I know I can speak for the listeners who are online. We love you, you know, and, you know, just to see a side oftentimes of the guests that I bring on that people don't normally get to see, you know. We see the love in you. We see the God in you, you know, and we feel that warmth flowing from you and embracing us, and we're just basking in your presence as the God in you comes forth. And so I'm humbled, you know, I'm truly humbled that you agreed to come on the show, and I'm just thankful that, you know, I was here to receive as you spoke. You know, I've sat here as a listener as well, although I hosted it, you know, I sat here as a listener and a recipient, you know, of your wisdom that came flowing from you this afternoon, sister. We appreciate you, and we love you so much. Any final words for the listeners out there today?
Yes, I would say come out and support the Sarah Dash One Woman Show. Also, any benefits or fundraisers that I'm involved in, if you ever hear my name attached to the Everlore House, to the scholarship funds, to health issues, breast cancer societies, please come out and support these organizations and really pay attention to what's happening in your community these days. I want every listener to be aware of the fact that we have to do something with these young kids, these young teenagers, young people who are in their 20s and 30s. Try to encourage them. Talking about them is one thing. But what are you going to do to help them change and to see the light? I would ask you to consider that as you go about the rest of your evening, because you too could have a child who is challenged, or niece or nephew or daughter, father, you know, a wife. What are you going to do to help them see the light? As I said, it is not enough to just talk about them, but talk to them so that they can do something about their lives, about where they're going. And you don't have to, I always say, if you're standing on the corner arguing with the fool, if someone rides by, they won't know who the fool is. So consider that. Okay?
Sister Sarah, thank you so much. I want to make a few announcements before I depart. Tomorrow, for the listeners who are listening online and by phone, tomorrow my special guest is going to be, I want you to tune in tomorrow from 7 to 8 p.m. Tomorrow my special guest is going to be a friend of Miss Sarah Dash's sister, Melba Moore, is going to be my special guest tomorrow night. So we definitely want you to tune in for that. On Thursday, Dr. Ruby Lathan is going to be my special guest. She actually has a testimony that's out of this world as well. She had gone to the doctor and been diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and she said, not me. And so she started taking some other remedies and, you know, got on some herbs and, you know, changed her diet to a live it, as I like to say, and went back to the doctor in a few months or a year or so and ran every test. Everything's gone, cleared up. 100%, and now she's out teaching about holistic health and how to use God's remedies, natural remedies to cure the body. Got some exciting shows coming up for everybody, so I want you to stay tuned for that. We'll be talking about an upcoming show, sickle cell, you know, remedies for that, you know. So I just want everybody to stay tuned. You can also go back into the archives. This show, if you know somebody that missed it, tell them to check the archives out and go back to the archives and listen to it over and over and over again. So to everybody again, I want to thank you so much for your time. I'm going to play another song by Sarah Dash, and I wanted to encourage you. It's called Hold On. And just words, and you're going to love it. Sister Sarah, thank you so much. God bless you. I love you so much. Peace and blessings to you.
I love you, Wanda. May God bless you and your lovely wife, who we didn't speak about this evening. Awesome lady.
I'm here just listening. Thank you so much. I really am.
Yes,
I'm here. She's right here.
Oh, it's so good to know you're still by your side. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. And thank you so much for everything that you're doing and agreeing to be on the show. So you know, your words were so encouraging. And so we just continue to pray for you and, you know, wish you the best.
I feel you, Sister Sarah. I feel you.
Thank you. You all have a safe journey.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch. I'm going to call you right after the show, okay?
Okay. I'll get my spaghetti and shrimp together.
All right. Everybody, listen to the song. It's called Hold On. That was Queen Sarah Dash. Talk to you all later. I love you. Peace.
Okay. I love you.